And the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. As you know, that we do have interpreters on this call with us, so please state your name first. It helps them do their job well. Done, and it also helps everyone who's joining via phone calls, knowing who's the speaker, anybody who listens to the audio afterwards, it helps them knowing who the speaker was at the moment. Everyone who is joining through phone calls can mute or unmute yourself by pressing star six. If you'd like to make some comments, you can press star nine, and that will virtually raise or lower hands. Everyone on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute. And if you would like to make some comments, please use the virtual hands. If you go under reactions, click on the raise hand icon, that'll do the trick. Chair Posner, I could read the agenda before taking the roll call.
Please.
Okay, great. So at this point, I would read the agenda, and let me share my screen as well. So if you would bear with me for a quick moment, everyone who can see can see my screen while I have that on the while I have the agenda on my screen. So we will go through, we'll take the roll call after I read the meeting agenda. Afterwards, Chair Posner would go through the motion of getting the agenda for today's meeting and last month's meeting minutes, as well as the board report approved. We do have a topic of discussion called impact of increased COVID cases. The next topic of discussion is WMATA budget. That's a committee discussion as well. And followed by Hettinger Award that has been in the discussion by this committee. So we will probably get some update by Patrick Sheehan. At 6:45, we will have public comments. 7 p.m., Tino Calabia will provide us with bus and rail subcommittee report. And at 7:15, Paul Semmelford will share Metro Access subcommittee report. And 7:30, the meeting will adjourn. Now I would stop sharing my screen. And I would go ahead and take the roll call for today's meeting. So please confirm your presence. Elvar Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy. Deborah Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein. Melanie Henderson.
Present.
Thank you. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Anthony Oberg. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semmelford.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan. And Kelly Simonov. All right, thank you for confirming your attendance. That concludes the roster for today's AAC meeting. At this point, Chair Posner, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you so much. Anna New is gracious enough to do our timing if we do need it. For today, and I'll remind everybody that we do have interpreters, so please announce who you are before you speak. And opposed to me, because I still have my New York brain working, try to speak slowly and articulate well. So, Happy New Year, and delighted we're not meeting in person, even though I miss you all. I didn't want to show
Happy New Year
today. So, for the approval of the agenda, without objection, we'll approve the agenda that Anu has just read. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. Prior meeting minutes. Hopefully you've all had an opportunity to go through them. And without objection, we will accept those meetings. Are there any objections, suggestions, or changes? The silence is deafening, so we will assume that the prior minutes are correct. And the report to the board from the chair. And as usual, it is the final draft until next Thursday. Because next Thursday, the 13th, the multiple board subcommittees are meeting, and I'm sure there will be discussion of the snowfall, the 7000 series being put back in service and then taking back out of service, et cetera, and what is going on in tonight's discussions about the budget and about COVID and Metro Access. So without objection, I would ask that we accept the draft, and final changes I will do after Thursday's meetings and send them out to everybody. So if there are objections, then I will make modifications. Any suggestions right now? If not, we'll take them as accepted. We're doing well tonight. It looks like we're okay. So it's not 5:40 yet, but we're close. So for the impact of the increased COVID cases, I would hope that we can have either Carol or Chris Blake let us know what's happening with, first of all, Metro Access, which is the most important to us. And then talk about the general new recommendations from the federal government, from the FTA, and what WMATA is doing for bus, rail, and Metro Access. So I'll turn the floor over to whoever wants to step up, either Ms. Lopez or Mr. Blake.
Well, I'll take this, sir. Thank you. And
wait a minute. You must be in Miami. I don't see any snow.
No, I'm up here. Trust me. I'm right here. Just got a nice summery background. But so let's start with, what are we doing now that there is a increase in COVID cases as a result of Omicron and just COVID in general? I kind of alluded to this 2 weeks ago during the Metro Access subcommittee meeting. And that is, on Metro Access, we haven't changed our policy. Metro Access remains a public transit shared ride service. But we have, and I want to just say, and just adding to that, is that members of the public who are using public transportation, especially now in a vaccine world, going in public should not expect, and when it comes to transportation, a direct personalized trip. Because previously we were doing it because there was no vaccine. Now that there's a vaccine, there's masks, there's ventilation, there are ways to protect oneself in the public. However, so that's why we didn't change the policy. However, we have changed our scheduling strategy. If you've been on Metro Access since Christmas, that's the day that this strategy went into effect, you most likely had direct trips for all of your trips since then. In fact, the numbers I can just share with you is that since Christmas, we've performed, well, between Christmas and New Year's Eve, December 31st, that was the time period, we performed 14,463 trips on Metro Access. Of those trips, 44 were shared rides. So 44 out of 14,000, that comes out to 0.003%, 0.3%. Not 3%, but 0.3%. So essentially, we're back to a direct trip service, and we're using shared rides only for urgent trip insertion, trip adjustment cases. So we're going to keep this strategy going for a while, at least to the end of January, possibly to the end of February, but we'll also let the situation around us, the environment, if you will, dictate how long we maintain this strategy. But for the sake of protecting our drivers, protecting our customers, we are essentially back to a direct trip service on Metro Access. So that's the first. Do we have any questions on that part of it? Do we want to talk any questions on that specifically?
Thank you. The only thing I want to throw out for discussion, and I'll throw it open to everybody, is with Omicron, and the numbers are way up. I've sent you the Arlington numbers, but the information from the CDC today is the danger of Omicron is to the pediatric population. In the adult, it appears Omicron, which is very invasive and very infective, but it tends to cause upper respiratory tract infections in adults, which means a case of the flu, which is no fun, but it's a case of the flu. In the pediatric population, it's lower respiratory infections, which causes croup and much more danger. So when it does come to the scheduling, I think some consideration has to be taken in the future. And again, this is with advice from the local docs and with Teresa and whatever, to understand that the pediatric population is at much greater risk from the Omicron. And that's why the schools are shutting down again. But that's a little bit of medical update as to what's going on. And I'll let the rest of the committee raise your hands and jump in.
Chair Posner, this is Anu. We do have three people with their hands up. Doris, Vanessa, followed by Paul.
Thank you. And you've got the timer.
Yes, I got the timer. So the timer will begin when Doris starts speaking. And everybody's getting 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Doris. I raised my hand right away and the chair took the words out of my mouth, except I want to ditto his message regarding the contagion, the infectious nature of the Omicron virus. And I appreciate that, as I understand it, that you are maintaining a operational policy in scheduling so that you're trying to have direct routes. Could you explain how this is different from the policy implemented earlier, which I understood that all trips would be direct trips without shared ride. So it sounds like the policy that was existent until whatever it is, a month or a month and a half, two months ago, was a more strict policy. And what would cause you to go back to that more strict policy of direct trips? What would you need to find out from CDC or local health authorities, and why isn't what they're telling us over the holidays about Omicron not bringing WMATA to make that decision?
Very good question, Doris. So the difference between what we were doing prior to November 1st and what we're doing now is that even if there was an urgent trip matter, I'll use my favorite Paul, since he's on the screen. Paul has been waiting for 2 hours because his van broke down. Then the van that was sent to go pick him up the second time had a customer injury. Just the worst trip in the world, and he's been waiting for like forever. In that case, we still would not put Paul in another vehicle with another customer. That was pre-November 1st. Now, post December 25th, all trips, just like pre-November 1st, are scheduled as individual direct trips. An individual means the individual customer. So that customer could travel with a PCA, member of the family, et cetera. But it's just that customer and not another Metro Access customer. However, if that same Paul trip, that trip from, heck, the worst trip in the world, and that vehicle is going in the same direction Paul is going into, right now we still have the ability or the right, if you will, to pick up Paul and take Paul along with that other passenger, so long as it doesn't violate our vehicle capacity constraint that we've placed on ourselves as part of this. So that's the only difference, is that we would, we would not ever place another customer in the vehicle with the customer already on the vehicle. Under this scenario, a customer can be placed on there under an urgent situation. And again, we did 14,000 trips and there were 44 in which those circumstances occurred, very rare. So this isn't just to protect on time or anything like that. This has to be a very extreme circumstance in which we would have the customer share a ride. Now, to your second question, which I think is an even better question, even. I mean, it gets to the heart of the nature of what we're discussing. What would it take for Metro Access to go back to the pre-November 1st policy and not even put another customer in a vehicle? Well, that's where it's philosophical and we have to think about it. The question would be, or the situation would be, if the government comes back and tells us, well, for this particular variant or for COVID in general, we've discovered the vaccines aren't working. Well, that changes. That takes us then back to the pre-vaccine stage in which we had the non-shared ride service. But from everything I've been studying, and y'all know how I've been trying to talk to the scientists and follow the science, the vaccine protects us from severe illness and hospitalization, even with a highly contagious variant like Omicron. So if we have a solution that allows a person utilizing public transportation and presumably traveling either from their home to a place of public or from the public back to their home, then at this point in time, we don't see a need to go back to the pre-November 1st policy. But if the science changes, there's a new variant and somebody comes out and says the vaccines, rather you have both shots and a booster or 3 or 4 or 5 shots, it's not working against this variant, that will change our calculus in terms of shared rides.
So I just want to ask, since people with disabilities, significant disabilities, and seniors over a certain age are more vulnerable, has WMATA looked at, and I think it needs to, the idea that since that those vehicles are fairly close contact, that breakthrough is more likely to happen, breakthrough infections, if it's seniors or persons with you know, pre-existing medical conditions, at which most people with disabilities are susceptible to. So why would you just not do it straight up? Go back to pre-November
30 seconds.
Okay, well, real quick, and we can pause on the timer for 1 second because she's asking some great questions. And again, I think what you're getting at is a very, very good point. But again, we're public transportation, and the vulnerabilities that the individuals you're describing would have or have would also be there in the public environment they're likely being transported to or from. So when we're talking about public, the same protections those individuals would need to engage in, whether they're going to a doctor, to church, to the mall, to the grocery store, the same protections they would have to engage in to protect themselves in those public environments should be the same protection they engage in when they're utilizing public transportation, even if it's paratransit. So I think if we're going to get back to normal, which is one thing we were trying to do when we went back to shared rides, well, we have to treat public transportation the same way the government has advised us to treat any of our public activities. So we can't have public transportation, or at least a part of it, be private transportation, but then we're taking you to public venues. So we want customers to protect themselves. We are doing our part to protect them as well as the drivers. Again, we're going to do our part with ventilation. We're going to do our part to ensure our drivers are encouraged to be vaccinated, or on the other hand, submit themselves to weekly testing to prove they're not COVID positive. And we want the customers to make certain decisions. We're not encouraging anything, but we are mandating the mask. And now, and again, in a post-vaccine world, there is another measure of protection that the customers have that they should consider partaking in to protect themselves in the public sector, including public transportation.
Thank you. Vanessa, I believe, was next.
Yes, hi. Thank you. Mr. Blake, I just wanted to know, have the new, the rest of the sedans been rolled out? You mentioned a while back that there was more sedans.
We have the 177 from the original purchase, and we're going to be adding another 50 very soon. I mean, I can't get too detailed into it, but there's been a proposal submitted. It's going through the procurement process. A lot of our procurements have been slowed up because of staff changes within procurement. So we're allowing them to catch up with us. But there'll be 50 more sedans coming on board before June 30th. And I think it's safe to say.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Paul, are you ready to go?
Okay. Oh, this is Paul Somerford. So question, Mr. Blake. We thank you for consideration of the cases around Christmas time and going forward and the policy shift. However, do just consider that, like I said, this is a highly contagious variant. And the fact that in Prince George's County, you know, you have a 29% positivity rate. That's 1 in 3 people are catching COVID. That's very alarming. In the district, you know, you have similar numbers going on. And, you know, following the science here, even though you're boosted and vaccinated, people like the governor, our county executive in PG, people are still getting it. So, and, you know, they even, you know, Dr. Fauci has said that, you know, people will get COVID even if they're vaccinated and boosted. So given how, you know, how highly contagious this variant is, especially in a contained space like Metro Access vehicle, You know, I know you've gone back to all trips except for emergencies, but again, I'm pressing like Doris, why not consider what we did pre-November? Even if you're boosted and vaccinated, people are still getting it at high alarming rates.
And I want you to know, I mean,
maybe no, I just asked the question. I know, and I appreciate what you're doing right now, but, you know, going forward.
I got you. And maybe I didn't stress it, but we did consider that. We did consider a policy change. What drove the decision of strategy versus policy, though, again, is the post-vaccination world that we're now in versus the pre-vaccination world we were in when we were absolutely doing only direct trips. And again, we're talking 0.3%. Now, of course, if you were on one of those 44 trips, you might be sitting there looking at the person next to you. Is this and I get that, but I need the customers to kind of hear me on the side that Metro Access is public transportation. And unlike the bus or the trains, and they have their own types of ventilation systems, we have that natural ventilation. We can open windows, have the breeze come through. We much closer to the air conditioning units than you are on these other services, but it is public transportation. So we can't, I don't believe at the moment in a post-vaccination world, we should continue the path of only direct trips. Again, I could change on that.
I'm not saying forever, but just given like the current circumstances, you know, until things calm down and where y'all can reassess the situation, you know, it's just so many people, even boosted in vaccination, are even getting it and are still high risk in an enclosed space, even in a possible Metro Access vehicle, to pass it from one person to another. Even they talk about masking, you know, the type of mask you need to have, that, you know, consideration that cloth masks may not be cutting it. You may need a K95, and, you know, not every customer has that. Just the possibility and thought, well, yeah, I don't have control over those factors, that all those variables are playing out on that vehicle, that, you know, trying to get close not to say it, is that, you know, having another person on board that's not the driver up at front, that's, you know, at least 6 feet away, the closeness of, you have to by emergency have two customers, the idea that it may possibly pass from one person to another for a variety of reasons. I'm not saying it would happen, and I'm not putting my image, but I'm just putting it out there as, you know, just a thought.
Believe me, I'm hearing you. I hear Doris. I totally, and I hear Dr. Phil on the same point. Right now, we hear you. I mean, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying we've gone with strategy instead of policy change. Right now, the strategy is resulting in 0.3% of trips being that way. I'm going to continue to follow the numbers and follow the science. I believe, and we'll see, I believe even that 0.3% is going to come down, because I think a lot of that was a result of Christmas trips and people, you know, canceling their trips earlier only to want to be picked up later on. Let's see how the numbers go. And if we can achieve what you and Doris and Dr. Phil are suggesting through, did I lose you? Through strategy. Oh, okay, that's my other screen. I'm sorry. Through strategy as opposed to policy, I think we can have a win-win. But let's see how this plays out. Our interest is to protect the drivers and protect the customers and the general public. Believe me, that is our interest and our commitment. And we're trying to do it through science, ventilation, masking, and vaccination. So I hear you. This is not the end of the story. It's not the end of the line. And we will continue to revisit this now, and provide you the data.
Last question is, are you still running the policy that if you find out a customer reveals to you that they test positive for COVID, that you still going to, you know, if they, you know, reveal that to you, to ride them on third party transportation. I just wanted to realize that.
Yes, okay. We are absolutely doing that. So that's not going to stop.
Okay. Thank you.
And I must say, now, of course, part of that is the honor system in general, but the number of trips from customers who have been who've been positive for COVID, who are Metro Access customers, has dropped significantly. So the message is getting there compared to where it was early in this pandemic to now. It appears that customers are doing the right thing by and large.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. That's super. I'd like to mention two things. One thing is, you said we need to worry about the drivers as well as the passengers. That has been a national problem from the airlines to Amtrak to school buses. And I won't make a motion, but I think it's worth considering. I know it's the contractor's job is to make sure the drivers are getting N95 masks to be safe. And it's just a point of information for everybody. There is a national trend going on right now. There are treatments for the COVID, Regeneron and others. And across the country, the communities are starting to permit fire departments, their local fire departments, to make home visits and give that medication. And so what I want to make the people here aware of, that they might contact their local county executive or their local county fire chief and find out if their jurisdiction is doing that. And if they are doing that, make their constituents aware of it, because it is particularly for the disability community, any elderly community that can't get out and can't get to the hospital. And so they have arranged four home visits from the fire department to give Regeneron and other things. And, you know, I know what's going on in Florida. I know what's going on in Arlington, but I don't know what's going on every place else. So what I would ask is that members of our committee take the time to contact their local people and find out if it's available in their locality, and then let their disability colleagues know that that's something that they can use to protect themselves. Because if you are going to get it, it's nice to be able to be treated for it. And that's all I have to say. Do we have any more questions on this particular topic before we move on to the WMATA budget discussion?
Chair Posner, this is, I know Doris and Vanessa, they both have their hands up.
Hi. Did they ever take them down? I'm not sure.
This is Doris. Okay, so what I wanted to comment to Mr. Blake is this. As I think you know, and most of the members, I am a dedicated mass transit user, fixed route user, and have done that, you know, because I feel that as long as I can, I'll use that vehicle, and then when I can't, and I'm 73, I would convert to Metro Access for part of or all of the time. So what I want to say is, as a fixed route user, is that right now with the Omicron variant, and even before that with the original and the Delta, but particularly now, I just cannot, as somebody who is a senior, even in good health, I cannot go get on the bus. I just can't. And because I know I'm placing myself at risk. And therefore, I think your argument about comparability has flaws in it in terms of the current situation. And I really, really think that you should look at, again, the policy rather than strategy and make it direct routes. And also, I know that you have to take into consideration demand, and I'm not sure if you said it before at other meetings, it needs a repeating for me, what the current demand is, because we were down right by 70% of demand on Metro Access, but how much is that increased really, and would it overload the situation? So I know, I think that's a big issue, but comparability right now, you know, my independence, as I've carved it out, is really
Doris, I'm going to interrupt you for just a minute.
Yeah, you've got it. It's a detriment.
No, because Rico has joined us, and I want to make certain that our translators are in contact with him so that they are pinned to one another so he can see them. Because Rico has put up his sign, and I want to make sure that our ASL translators can communicate.
That's a good catch, because I didn't even see that. You're right. The interpreter is on the phone.
Yeah, I can see my interpreter. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Okay.
I do have a question. Rico stating, I do have a question. Hold on one second. Let me pin you. I just need to make you bigger. Hold on one moment.
Okay. Can I respond to Rico and say, can let me respond to Doris's question first, and then
sure, go ahead, Chris. Go ahead, take it.
While we're so Doris, Doris, okay. Again, makes some good points. One, she doesn't look a day over 50, so that's a great thing. But Doris, if you come back to Metro Access or come to Metro Access, first thing I would encourage you to do is sign up for Abilities Ride. We'll love to put you on there. And I hear you, Doris, but that's precisely the point we're making. And I think that's part of what's out here. With paratransit, too often paratransit has been looked at as something other than public transportation. Well, if I have to share a ride over here on fixed route, and I don't want to for whatever reason, the time, safety, health, pandemic, well, I'll just come over here to Metro Access and get a direct trip. Well, that's not comparable service. And so I hear you. And if you do book a Metro Access trip, we would be happy to serve you. It is your right to do so. And again, looking at the statistics, you are extremely likely to not ever share a ride because, again, less than 0.3%. And that was during a quirky time of the calendar, a holiday period. During regular time, that number should go down, but I'll keep tracking it. The second question you ask is, where are we in terms of ridership? And because I want to make it clear, this decision, strategy versus policy, has nothing to do with Metro Access demand. I want to make it clear, this is not a budget or efficiency decision. This is a decision based on science and what we currently have. But I will tell you, on the weekends, we're back to our pre-pandemic service levels. On the weekdays, we're about 70%, 65, 70% of our pre-pandemic levels. But shared rides, direct trips, what we tried to do as a Metro Access management team in working with our service delivery providers who've done a pretty darn good job. I won't go over the top with praise for them because they know there's certain areas they've disappointed me in, but we have planned and we have strategized and we have done things to prepare our service so that regardless of what happened with the pandemic, Metro Access customer service impact would be minimal at the worst. I mean, we have made sure that we have enough drivers. We've made sure that we have the vehicles and that we can spread customers. Even when we went back to shared rides, that we tried to spread customers apart as much as possible. We never went over that number of one productivity. We stayed below that number, meaning there was on average, always less than one Metro Access passenger on a vehicle at a time per hour. So we've planned and we've prepared, and that's one reason Metro Access was one of the last paratransit providers to go back to shared rides. It's why we could easily and make the decision based on science and what's happening to go back to a strategy of direct trips. And again, if something changes and we go back to a policy, that will be a decision as well. But I don't want anyone to think that it's budget, efficiency, ridership, or anything that's driving our decisions. This is pure science and basics of the philosophy of public transportation.
Thank you. Rico, you had your question? You're muted.
Hi, this is his interpreter. He's not on screen at the moment.
Okay, we could come back to him.
Vanessa, this is Anu. Vanessa, did you have another question?
Yes, I do. Mr. Blake, I wanted to know, has there been any more consideration about putting shields in the sedans?
No, because that was a matter that we hotly debated throughout the early days of the pandemic. And as I learned more about airborne viruses, what protects customers from each other, from the driver, drivers from the customers, shields were symbolic more than beneficial. And again, I thought that just empirically in my mind, but I have to always go back to Tino because it was Tino. I mean, we talked to doctors. I was going to reach out to people, but it was actually an article that Tino advised me to read. Not only did I read it, I reached out to that specific research doctor at University of Massachusetts Amherst. And the way we address a airborne virus in a closed environment is to open that environment up through ventilation. And the shields would help with what they call droplets. But if all of us are wearing masks, or even some cases double masks, there's really no droplets. But even without the droplets, you're not stopping the airborne virus. So we didn't focus on shields. We focused on ventilation and mask wearing.
Thank you.
Okay. Are you ready for my question?
Yes.
Okay, hold on, Tina. Let me just make sure Vanessa heard my answer and that she's, I'm gonna say she'll agree with my answer, but did she hear my answer? And
yes, I did. Okay. I did. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Yes, so we're ready for Mr. Dancy. I'm getting old, can't remember names quick.
Okay, currently many customers are waiting for the bus and had no idea that the bus stopped service today. I had to walk from the transit station to my home and there were no buses. No one informed me that service was canceled. I had no idea. I'm in shock, wondering what is going on. Why were we not informed? Why was it not communicated to us that there was no service today?
Well, Rico, okay. It was an app.
All it says is out of service because of the weather.
Well, no.
Many Rico, customers were out there waiting for the bus.
Rico.
What are they supposed to do?
Okay, can we respond?
And doctor's appointments.
Okay, can we respond?
What are we supposed to do?
We would like to respond.
Excuse me, Rico. Okay. Yes. This evening, before the day started, there was an announcement.
Hold on 1 second. I need to find the interpreter.
Okay.
Okay, I can see the interpreter now.
Okay.
So I am concerned about that.
Yes, we understand. And WMATA on their website announced this morning that the buses would only be running on the special snow routes. About noontime, they changed that to there will be no bus service because the wind and the snow got so bad. So while they did not call individuals, if you have signed up for announcements through the website, you would have received the same email that I received that told me this morning only special bus routes would be running, and this afternoon no buses would be running.
I didn't get any kind of email like that.
Well, you have to sign up for it.
You have to sign up for our e-alert. So can I add to your excellent point, Dr. Paul?
I've already signed up for that, but I am not receiving any notifications.
Oh, okay. So in that case,
sign up for buses and all of the routes. Because when you signed up for the notifications, they asked you what you are interested in. And so I have signed up for every one of the lines.
I haven't gotten an email. I haven't received notification.
Here's what we're going to do. Anu Sharma, our excellent AAC coordinator, will reach out to you and walk you through the process to ensure that you've signed up for the e-alert that Dr. Posner is referencing. Because that's the information. You may have signed up for information from Metro, but we're talking specifically about the e-alert so that when things like what happened today, as Dr. Posner pointed out, we started the day with a certain bus schedule, but in the middle of the morning, the snow was coming down with such intensity that bus shut down their suspended service for a little while.
Can I ask, will the buses be running tomorrow?
The buses will be running again on a limited schedule tomorrow. And those announcements will be made very shortly as well. But they will be running on a limited schedule tomorrow. Now, one thing, Dr. Posner, and this is where Metro Access is a little different than fixed route. Whereas fixed route, you have anonymity in terms of your usage. Metro Access paused our service for several hours this morning as well, probably from around 10:30 until 3:30 today. But what we did is send out robocalls to every customer who had a trip on the schedule. But of course, with fixed route service, whether the person has a disability or not, you can't just reach out because you never know who planned to ride bus or rail that particular day. That's why everyone who does use fixed route needs to sign up for the e-alerts as you have advised.
Yes, and they were a little slow because when they had the fire at Metro Center, they said, consider taking the bus. And they listed the buses, even though the buses weren't running.
Okay.
But I chuckled a little bit about that. The same thing with the tree down at Arlington Cemetery. They gave a list of buses that you might take, which was fine earlier in the morning, but when all bus service stopped, they still did that. But it was a chuckle, but it would be good to feed back to them that they need to get their announcements together for everybody. Along that line, I'd like to ask Ms. Williams-Hall, should disaster strike tomorrow with the switch to 5G, and suddenly all of the rangers go out of whack and can no longer navigate. Is there a backup for that? Predominantly there's to get to the riders and let them know there is no service. I'm hoping the best happens and, you know, the drivers will have 5G phones and things will work, but considering what has happened to the airlines at the Amtrak, I think Metro Access may want to hope for the best, but prepare for the worst.
Yes. Absolutely. Go ahead, Mr. Blake.
No, I'm sorry. I forgot you were wrong. Go ahead.
It's okay. So actually about 18 months ago, we prepared for that. We've updated all of our rangers now that will work on the 5G network. So we should be just fine.
All right. Once again, a gold star. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Posner, this is Anu. Steve Caffin has his hand up. Steve, did you want to go ahead and make any comments?
Yes, I do. Steve Caffin, to say my name. Yeah, may I suggest that you consider also putting the same alert for people who haven't activated their alerts on the in the next bus system. And I'll tell you why. The next bus system, even after the alert was issued and people who are on the list certainly received them, the next bus system continued to show buses for the routes that had been canceled. But instead of specific information, specific times, it said using scheduled time. So would somebody just take a look at it from an IT standpoint? It may just be a blanket notice that's required for the particular routes that are now canceled or out of service for people who go directly to that system and don't receive the alerts. Just take a look at that if you would.
I have a meeting with our COO and the bus team. Well, all of us are meeting at 7. That's why I may have to drop off a little early. But I will bring up both points in terms of the point Dr. Posner raised earlier, in terms of those alerts still directing people to bus, even though bus was not running, and the difference between the information received on the next bus system versus what's happening in reality with the e-alerts.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's super. We're a little behind. We're at 6:20. So we've used up our budget discussion time.
So can I ask a question, Mr. Chairman? And we don't have to do it right this moment. I know we were expecting, I believe, a member of the board today. I'm not sure that's going to happen. Only because I may have to leave a little early. And I know you can handle the budget without me. You know the Metro Access budget better than I do, I believe. But at some point, not right this moment necessarily, but can we have the public comments a little earlier? Therefore, if there's anything directed towards me, I could be here to address them and not appear to be running, if you will, if that's okay with you.
No, that's super. What I was going to suggest is we skip the budget discussion tonight because we won't know what's going on until we have the next budget subcommittee meeting. And we go to Patrick's report on the Hedinger Award, then go to public comment. We can go to public comment first. If you have to leave early, Chris, let me know.
Well, I have to leave by about 7. So
okay. Well, Patrick, be short, and then we'll go to public comment.
Actually, Phil, yes. Thank you, Phil. I believe we were going to establish a date for the Hedinger Award, which was going to be in February. At what? I don't know that we've had that we've agreed on a date for that yet, have we?
Patrick, this is Anu. So the majority had discussed a date for February. For 2020 Hedinger Award, we held the award ceremony during the first part of the AAC meeting. If the committee approves, we could do the same this time as well. If not, we can hold it at a different date.
And I would move that we would hold it at the beginning of our regularly scheduled meeting then in February, which would be which date? Does that anyone have a calendar?
That would be the 7th of February.
Okay. Yeah. So I would make that a motion that we hold the Hedinger Award at the for the first half of the meeting as we did last year.
So and just to add a little bit more information, that would be Monday, February 7th, and the award ceremony would begin at 5:30, and the meeting discussions could begin at 6:30 p.m. until 7:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a second? Would anybody like to second that?
Second.
Okay, second. We have a motion and a second. It's open for discussion, and then we'll have a vote. Without discussion, without dissent, is anyone opposed? The motion passes. We have a date for the Hettinger Award. Thank you. Okay, let's go to public comment. Manu, do we have any public comments?
At this point, we do one. Ansel Torres would like to make some comments. Mr. Torres, if you would unmute yourself, and I would start the timer for 3 minutes when you begin speaking, and 30 seconds before the 3 minutes end, I would give you a warning saying 30 seconds. Go ahead, please.
Good evening. Let me first start by saying, welcome back, everybody. I've been away for a while for lots of different reasons, but what I'd like to do is to go straight into what I see as good things and bad things that's happening with this AAC committee and the leadership that we are provided herein. The Abilities Ride Reincarnated is working quite well, but we should do something about the number of text messages that one has to scroll through in order to let Uber know that we're ready. Now, moving on to the other issues. There are so many that my 3 minutes will run out, but that's okay. We have a situation where in 2021, I am having some difficulty in understanding what the AAC has achieved for the disabled community. We have a number of things here that we know that they have done. Let's take a look at that. Less speech for the disabled who the AAC claims to represent at AAC meetings. Recommendations for non-disabled employees at WMATA. I'm not sure how you award someone for simply doing their job, a job that many times still causes lots of Metro Access riders a tremendous amount of stress. We still have no audit of the overcharge of Metro Access passengers. Nothing is being done about that. No flat fare for Metro Access riders, and it doesn't seem as though the board is respecting anything on that. But yet the AAC seems to be in lockstep with them in trying to make things harder for disabled people, as evidenced by some of the things that I've said. I can go on and on. At the last meeting I attended, Pat Sheehan said that I don't speak for him. I would be quite surprised that if anybody thinks on the AAC that I speak for them. But I am assuming by some of these things that he and you who make these decisions, you're speaking for me. Well, if you're speaking for me and I am still being disadvantaged and other people like me are being disadvantaged, could you not speak for me anymore? Can I make that request in 2022? Because what we have here is a bit of a disaster. The remaining comments that I have will be submitted in writing. Have a wonderful evening.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Torres, and welcome back, and Happy New Year to you as well. I will just like to address a couple of points just because they are business related. One, we talked about Uber and the number of text messages. And as a person who takes mystery rides to get a sense of how the drivers are performing, to get an understanding of the technology and the messaging so that when customers call me, I can kind of walk them through it, even if I'm not sitting right there with them, I do recognize the number of text messages. I'll take some responsibility for that. And here's why we did it that way. We wanted this, we wanted every provider on the network, on our Abilities Ride program, to be as accessible as possible. Whereas when we partner with local taxi cab companies, they have call centers, they have human beings, they have people you can speak with. Anything goes wrong, there's a person there. If there's something that happens, I can get in my car, go meet them at the location of incident, what have you. When you talk about Uber, Uber is a very technological, and I know I'm speaking to the choir, to you and others, but I just got to say it out so people understand. Uber is very technologically based, very little human action involved. And so in that regard, there's a lot of information on an Uber app screen, a whole lot of information that a person with vision like myself can just see and operate from without ever talking to a human being. But I needed, and Metro needed, Uber to make that information come to life for people who have visual disabilities, whether they're low vision or completely blind. In order to take all that information that's on the Uber app screen and make it usable to an array of functioning individuals with visual disabilities. Now yourself, Mr. Torres, I'm just speaking to you as a person who raised it, not pointing at you, but you're very technologically savvy and I admire that in you. There are a lot of people who are not as technologically savvy as you are with or without visual capabilities, visual abilities. But in order to ensure that the Uber part of the Abilities Ride program is as accessible to people with visual disabilities and to get all of that information off that screen and make it real for people with visual disabilities, it requires a lot of text. It requires a lot of verbiage, if you will. And it's a complaint I get from a lot of people, but it's not perfect. But for the spirit of accessibility, it's something I believe in, and I'm encouraged that they listen to us. And when I say us, I'm talking about Metro and what I hear from the public, because that's who I'm working on behalf of. Now, I would say this. There's one way we can reduce a whole lot of text messaging. What happens with Uber is you get a lot of text messaging because we're giving you the flexibility to contact Uber when you're ready to be picked up. You book a trip with Metro Access and your pickup time is 6 a.m. Well, I want to leave at 5:30 today, or I want to leave at 7:30 today. Well, with the flex option, you have that capability, but that requires a whole lot more communication, a lot more information before you get to the link. If we just booked your trip by your pickup time, you only get one text message, or maybe two now with the mask information, but you lose all of that flexibility, which is something I know a lot of customers, and I believe yourself included, really, really like. So can we get to a point where there's fewer text messages at some point? Perhaps, but I would not want to go in that direction in leave people with visual disabilities at a disadvantage to those who have visual who have vision and can just look at the screen and see what's going on. And on your second point about the flat fare, we do have a flat fare on the weekends at this point in time. It is a flat fare on the weekends for everybody, regardless where they're being picked up and where they're being taken to. And thanks to the advocacy of the AAC, no, we don't have it just yet, Monday through Sunday. But I can tell you, I'm highly confident that that is on its way. And I couldn't, I couldn't do it by myself. Obviously that didn't work, my own singular efforts. But I think the advocacy of the AAC, which I will continue to encourage on this particular issue and all issues, is playing a very key role in making the flat fare 7 days a week a reality. Thank you.
Thank you. I see Patrick and Steve and Vanessa with their hands up. And all three of you have already spoken. So if you don't have anything to add, please pull your hands down.
And thank you, Phil. I was going to add something or ask you to actually speak to something.
Okay, and Patrick, go ahead and take it.
Sorry, Steve. Phil, I was going to ask you to speak to Ansel brought up the point, and Mr. Blake just referred to it, about the advocacy that we've been doing, you have been doing in front of the board for a flat fare, for fare simplification, and then for passes, which we've been advocating now for at least a couple of years. So I don't know if you want to speak to that with respect to the actions of this committee, but I think we've gone on record as to advocating, fighting for it. The fact that we don't have it doesn't mean we're not advocating for it. And I didn't know if you wanted to speak to that to sort of put it on the record.
Yes, for the record, I think the question is, what are we doing? What are we advocating for? Who are we advocating for? And how successful have we been? And I will admit, we have worked incredibly hard to get some of the things that we hear from the community at these meetings. And I can tell you, when I do my reports or my personal conversations with the GM or individual board members, one of the questions that they always ask, is this something you are asking for, or is this something the entire committee is asking for? And that's why we try to ask for motions, so that they know it's something that's coming from the committee. When it's just coming from me, I tell them it's just coming from me. I also, during my reports to the board, will often present what the public brings to us at our meetings. And it's not just the public that brings to us at the meetings, but the membership of this committee has access to several disability organizations, including co-riders on the vans and on the bus and on the rail. And so that is always forwarded when we advocate, but effectiveness is difficult, as you can tell by looking at national politics and local politics, but we are trying. And we also encourage you, as I have done on many occasions, join us at the board meetings and advocate again. And when we do talk about the budget next time, we are going to again remind every member of this committee that they should all show up and bring all of the members of their groups and people that they represent and show up at the hearings, because there is strength in numbers. And so we can only do what we can do, and we're trying. And please help us out. Steve?
Yeah, thank you, Steve Kaplan. Yeah, we sure saw that last year when a whole group of people looking for a particular bus that had been eliminated presented themselves and got that route back. So that's very true. Mr. Blake, since you're having this meeting tomorrow or tonight, I forget, let me just let you know that the digital next bus information that appears in the kiosks, or that have that information, the information has been off, and off by more than just 1 or 2 minutes. And I'm not talking about the estimates. I'm talking about the ones which are supposed to track via the satellite.
Right.
And a couple days ago, I'd started about a week and a half ago. And I thought initially it was just the December 26th changes of some bus routes, but that should not affect the satellite information. In fact, one time I pointed out, it was on a 42 bus, I pointed out to the driver that the time went from 8 minutes where the bus was scheduled to come to 4 minutes, and he arrived. And I pointed it out to him, hey, look at that. You see, it says 4 minutes and you're here. He said, you know, I don't know what's going on. So I want to raise that with you. So perhaps, you can just bring that to somebody's attention. It's definitely the 42 line. And I, you know, that's been detoured to Kennedy Center now. So that's an issue, but it's not the next, you know, it's the information that should be accurate because it's coming from the center.
Right, it's being tracked. Now, yeah. let me just ask you a couple of questions, because we had this, and I'm just going back to Baltimore because that was my orientation with this type of technology, where we tried this and wasn't quite successful. One thing we did have a problem with, and I'm not saying this happened with you, but I'm asking you from your experience and if you even was aware, are the times that you're getting, is it generally, as this case was, you just referenced, early versus later?
It's both, unfortunately, because the L2 bus, the L2 bus has been arriving later.
And
if you're dealing with a minute or two, that's to be expected. You know, you hit one traffic light or two traffic lights.
Correct. I was going to say that as well.
You know what I mean? But and this just appeared about 10 days ago. So the changes in information which went into the system on December 26th for some routes might just have thrown off whatever's coming through. I just don't know, but I'm just letting you know that.
I'll definitely report it. I know one problem we had over there, I'm not saying this is what happened, is that we sometimes, I won't say it was all the time, but we had a problem with bunching in terms of buses. One bus is so late that the bus behind it kind of catches up, because now the bus in front is very crowded and the bus behind it doesn't have anybody hardly to pick up. And they would get some separation and you would see one bus there, but the satellite or the GPS in this case was actually tracking the second bus. So it made it look off. I'm not saying that's the case here. I know that's one problem we discovered there was just that whole bunching issue. But we need to make sure, yeah, which bus are they actually tracking? And I'm presuming, and this is just a question.
Sure.
The block number of the vehicle is not on the screen, correct?
No, it's not. The screen just shows the route number. The route, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I think we need to let Ms. Rush.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Thanks.
Thank you.
I will follow up. Yes.
You're unmuted, please.
Referencing what Mr. Torres said about the flat fare, long before he was attending the meetings and participating, we have been asking year after year, meeting after meeting, for a flat fare. I think what he is saying is, why does it take so long to meet a request? When it jumped up from $3 to $7, it took us a long time to get it back down 50 cents. We had hearings after hearings. I paid for people to come to hearings. People participated. It's been too long. And I think what he's not understanding, and it's a good question, why does it take so long to hear the request from the AAC and from the public?
I think that's a very good question. Now, as you know, Ms. Rush and others, I always like to characterize things in terms of AC, you know, what is it? BC and AC. So before Chris got into a role involving directly with Metro Access, that was not necessarily on my radar, if you will. And even once I got involved with Metro Access, there were other priorities, and I really didn't hear, I'll be honest, the flat fare as the immediate issue, given other things I've been doing and trying to deal with this service and trying to offer alternatives and flexibility at very low cost. Or, you know, as y'all know, right now that low cost is free, as well as balancing efficiency and making the service a public transit service. However, less than a year ago, I clearly heard the message of flat fare that requires some, I want you again, your advocacy needs to continue, and it's been doing, you've been doing it for a long time, as you say, and that's great, and it needs to continue. But I can tell you that you now have an ally, if you will, and I've been doing my part on the internal advocacy, if you will, of the flat fare, dealing with the numbers, dealing with the projections, and being a strong advocate of the flat fare for a number of reasons. So I just want you to know it may have taken a long time. Part of the reason is the AAC was perhaps fighting the battle on its own, but now you have, I can just tell you for the record, a full-fledged ally in this battle. And I believe through your advocacy and the information I'm sharing, I believe it's going to happen pretty soon. And if, and again, it's something I just got involved with less than a year ago. And if we can get it within a year, it won't take away all the years that you and others have advocated for, but that would be a pretty quick turnaround for something this monumental. I can assure you that.
Thank you. That's super. I will point out something I learned from Glenn Millis a long, long time ago. And that is, everything we request or the public requests has a price tag, a cost attached to it. Nothing is free. And our job has been to translate, find out what the cost of that request is, and find out whether it's sustainable and whether the return on investment for both the customer and for WMATA are positive. And it takes a long time to gather all those numbers, to get pilots done, and to get the final thing finished. And that's what we have been doing with fare reduction, with flat fare, with a lot of the things that we have worked on. I see Tino has popped on. I'm going to ask Tino and Anu a favor. Because of the switch over to 5G sometime this week, mm-hmm. It would be wonderful if you two could get together either early Monday morning or possibly on Thursday or Friday and make sure that our Zoom meeting works with the prehistoric equipment that Mr. Calabia has and the 21st century equipment that WMATA has, unless Ms. Terry Ann Hall will lend us some of her 22nd century equipment. So if you two would be willing to get together sometime this week or Monday morning to make sure that we can have a Zoom meeting on Monday.
Chair Posner, this is Anu. Thank you. I was actually thinking along the same lines, and I would have contacted Tino afterwards, probably tomorrow, but thank you.
Thank you. And Tino, your hand is up, so please go ahead. You're smiling. Always like to see you smiling.
On that last point, I do have an antediluvial Mac desktop, so I guess if it works on mine, it'll work on everybody's. Let me mention one other thing related to the comment about budgets and the accessibility requirements that we reference. You know, in the monumental book, called the Great Society Subway. It refers to our WMATA's subway system, and it focuses as much on the work of Harry Weiss, the architect who initiated and carried out most of the design that was adopted for the first stations as well as the rest of the stations. I've said this before, and I told the WMATA board when I initially spoke in public to them 4 or 5 years ago, that monumental book mentions early on that Harry Weiss said that the things that came up during the process in designing our subway system, our metro system, the things that were brought to his attention by people with disabilities were just a bunch of expensive things. He said it in such a way that it was more dismissive than I've just said myself. On the other hand, many of the things that have been brought up over the years by the Accessibility Advisory Committee and others have resulted in improvements in the design, despite the fact that the brutalist concrete design left little area for change in the original construction of the subway. But nonetheless, we shouldn't hesitate to make our advice known about what we consider to be helpful to people with disabilities and seniors, even though price tags are included. We should continue to do what we need to do. And in some cases, it may be that they're too expensive and not cost beneficial to the overall metro budget. But we shouldn't hesitate to make our recommendations known based on our experiences and what we learn from other people. Thanks. Phil.
Thank you, Tino. I see Denise, your hand is still up. I'm sure you have something relevant to say if you unmute yourself.
We must note that, for example, the 7000 series, some things we asked for and we got them. Then some other things that became a problem. Now it's costing triple. So it's better to do it in the front than in the back. It's cheaper up front for some of the things that we request than to try to fix it after the fact.
Amen to that.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Definitely, and that is the way I start all of my conversations with board members and staff. And I try not to say I told you so, but being subtle and friendly and reminding them of some of the things that could have been averted is very powerful. And when you talk to the board, please, in a very gentle, friendly way, remind them that sometimes someone with low vision has a better idea of whether a new fare gate or a new payment method is going to work, or a new intercar barrier is going to work. And so that is important, because fixing, and all you have to do is remind them of the Silver Spring bus terminal and the second stage of the Silver Line, that how much more expensive it is to fix something after it's done.
And the cargo.
Go ahead, Denise, I think you're still going. Okay, we are ahead of schedule and we've had a request from Mr. Semelford if we could let Metro Access give their report first and let Mr. Calabia have the last shot. And if Tino is amenable, can we let Paul go with his report on Metro Access?
Sure, agreed.
Is Mr. Blake still there?
Yes, he is.
I am still here, yes.
So as part of my report, we talked about last month at the subcommittee meeting about somebody Metro Access monthly statistics. And I asked about the definition of missed trips. And I looked at the report here and I see you put in a definition, but I have a question about it because previously the definition of missed trips was customer, the trip was more than 30 minutes late. Now it says customers did not take the trip due to late pickup or the driver did not dwell. If you can explain that modified definition, is it to make it more clarity that basically clearly make a distinction of what missed trips are versus an excessively late trip, which is more than 20 minutes. And then you define missed trips as 30 minutes. And I guess after I made those suggestive comments, y'all really fine tuned it. If you can respond to that.
Well, I think they were responding to your request to put the definition in there, but no, a missed trip versus an excessively late trip. Excessively late means more than 20 minutes, but the customer did take the trip. Mm-hmm. A missed trip, there is no trip. The customer did not take the trip. And generally it happens if the trip was so late, the customer chose not to take the trip. That is the traditional definition of a missed trip. But no, there is no ride taken by the customer.
Okay, then explain also due to late pickups. I understand that, or driver did not dwell. Can you explain that comment?
Okay, driver did not dwell.
Because I'm looking at the November report and I'm looking at
where it says. I need to make sure I understand what the staff meant by that.
So if you get back to me on that, that'd be great.
Yeah, we'll come back on that.
Okay, good. So going back to the rest of my report, that's why I need you here to get that clarification by the next meeting. So at the last meeting in December, we talked about the return of shared rides. Mr. Blake updated us at that point. About 30% of all trips were shared rides in November. However, since Omicron has come into play and the number of cases, as we learned this evening, obviously they are following the science and made a strategy decision, use a strategy to mitigate in light of what is going on. So right now, that is what they're using. Now, also there was talk about the current vaccination policy of drivers, given the new variant. And again, Mr. Blake reiterated that if a driver has to show proof of vaccination or submit to weekly tests. The Billy's Rides update is, again, they're using as much of it as possible to help, alleviate the ridership and trips to spread out the trips. This rush during the media asked about, customer being informed that driver testing positive. Mr. Blake explained what that process was when a customer is informed that a driver possibly tested positive and what that means. And let's see. Mr. Blake stated that vaccination is not a requirement to drive a Metro Access vehicle. And we asked about the other providers and what safety measures are they taking with their drivers at their bases. Some do some said they do temperature checks. Some are in process of getting that done. So I think just about all of them have, provide some PPE and equipment to the drivers. So they are able to, do that. And we've also, asked about the disinfecting of the vehicles and keeping it clean. And I know Ms. Coles asked about the cleaning process for the seatbelts and whether, what's being placed underneath them. And Mr. Blake stated he would discuss the matter and provide an update. I was hoping Mr. Blake might also give an update on that if there is not one right now. If not, we hopefully will get it at the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting this month. And that is my report, unless Ms. Rush has anything to add to it.
I got disconnected, so I don't know what you have already said.
So I went through the fact that you asked about customers testing, a customer got called, testing positive. What the procedure was that, and Mr. Blake explained at the last meeting, the vaccination policy and everything related to that. And I talked about Ms. Coles about the cleaning process for seatbelts and, what's going to be placed underneath the arm, and that Mr. Blake said he would discuss the matter and provide an update. And I was hopefully, I guess he left to provide an update. I guess I want to put on record that to follow up with us again, one of the staff, by the next Metro Access meeting for Ms. Cole's
question. Right, that's going to be the meeting, because Ms. Rush asked about the numbers of drivers who had been, because we were talking about contact tracing, and mm-hmm. she asked how many drivers had been positive at some point during the, and so I went back to the beginning of the year. I have the numbers, but yeah, we're going to talk about that at the Metro Access Subcommittee.
And I see that on the agenda, so we very much appreciate that you're going to bring some data for us to share and discuss on that very important topic. Go ahead.
The 90% as opposed to what's on the books, the 92%.
Okay. And, then we talk. Go ahead and add that we had an established goal. I guess the providers had for 92%. Mr. Blake feels the industry standard is 90%. Of course, you, Ms. Rush, said we're still going to hold you to the 92% on time.
And that's fair. But again, it's not the industry standard. We're above the industry standard, in my humble opinion. But I hear Ms. Rush, it's in the minutes for the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting, is that our commitment to the public is to be on time 90% of the time or greater, although our goal is always 100. But yes, there is a difference between our commitment to the public and the standard we are holding our contractors to.
Oh, and the last piece was the new in the and our metrics for Metro Access, the TRIPS meeting the fixed route equivalency goal. I think you were going to say by this next month, you're going to fix up what the definition looks like, because I think there were some exclusions and now it says excludes non-ADA trips.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we can now move on to Tina, if you would like to do bus rail. And I will let Doris come when Tino is finished, because I know she has a couple of motions she would like to propose. So Tino, please take it.
Yes, the draft record of the bus rail subcommittee meeting last month deals with we heard a presentation on elevators and elevator services. We heard our fellow member, Debbie Fisher, about a presentation in the near future regarding developmental disabilities. We also heard an ombudsman report from Carol Lopez, and part of that discussion involved the problem of the vertical gaps between the rail car and a station platform. And I have to admit to being negligent. I had promised to try and locate the young wheelchair user who brought to my attention how the rollers, the front rollers on her wheelchair do not allow her to board many rail cars, some but not all. I will try and remember to do that before the next meeting. We also discussed violence in the metro rail system and how something must be done to enforce the regulations against violence or what can be done about fare evasion. And roughly, those were the items that were discussed at the last meeting. And this will be brought up for a review again and approval of the minutes in the meeting next week. Let me add too that regarding what I had referred to about the original design and construction of our metro rail system, I referenced the first statement I had made to the board about that. And I will try and find that and share by way of an addendum to these minutes of this meeting what I said. It only takes a few paragraphs, but it gives some insight into how our role generally has been viewed by outsiders, especially by outsiders who design and develop metro rail or metro bus systems. I will try and dig that up, and I ask that it be included as an addendum to the current meeting. Thank you. Hello? I've concluded, okay. Phil.
Yes, without objection, we will include that in the minutes of the current meeting. Okay. And I will now ask if there are any objections before I ask Anu to include that. Hearing no objections, Anu, would you grant Mr. Clavia's request?
Sure. We'll include that in the minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Doris, are you still with us?
Yes.
I have received your email about motions that you would support. Would you like to present them?
Yes, I could enunciate them. There was one of the questions, though, that came up, or we can do it in writing via email. But one of the questions came up during the Metro Access report, committee report. Perhaps that can be addressed at its next meeting, and it's this. With the Abilities Ride, or whatever we're calling the program, the Flex program right now, while using Uber, for example, I believe in Virginia, Are the Uber drivers required to abide by the wait time, the at the door wait time for a customer to come out and get into the vehicle? And I ask this question in light of the U.S. Department of Justice's lawsuit against Uber for overcharging customers for wait times that extend beyond, I believe it's 2 minutes, and extends to how long it takes them to get into the vehicle. So I'm concerned about ADA compliance with Uber as a provider and what the stance of the policy of WMATA is or should be. Do you want me to mention the other things, or is it too short of time and we can just distribute my email?
Oh, please go ahead, Doris.
Say again.
Please go ahead and go through your full list. And okay. That way they will
okay.
be in minutes.
I sent an email with some questions about what is WMATA's requirement for drivers of Metro Access vehicles. Is there a requirement that drivers be fully vaccinated up to and including booster shots and whatever comes after that, and show proof before they can get in and be driving a vehicle? And is there a similar requirement for Metro bus drivers and even rail, but Metro bus drivers have as close a contact with the public as do Metro Access drivers, so that's why I ask it.
And, can I answer the first question?
So it's a series of questions, and there was another question about reasonable accommodation regarding direct rides for a person with a disability with a pre-existing medical condition as being so that they can get that in their record, so because it would seem to me with my experience with ADA accommodations that could be considered an accommodation necessary due to their disability.
Yeah, what I will suggest is, Doris, you sent the email to me, to Paul, and to Mr. Blake. And I would ask Paul and Mr. Blake to write their answers with a copy to Anu so that their answers can be included along with the questions in the minutes.
Oh, can I just quickly answer the question about Metro Access drivers?
Yeah, but
Mr. Blake was very clear about that in the proposed minutes for last month's meeting. So the drivers, and get me wrong here, I see the director here of Metro Access Service, and Mr. Blake, if he's still on that, drivers either, show proof of vaccination or submit to weekly testing. That is the policy as it stands.
And that is correct. This is Ms. Williams Hall, Director of Metro Access Services.
And that's the only one I will read and attest to because they are printed in my, minutes, proposed minutes. Thank you.
But the addition to that is whether we're requiring also that they show proof booster of the boosters.
At this point, I believe I asked is no, but that's a good question we can ask. But I believe it's no based on what he wrote in our, the response was last month in tentative minutes.
Thank you. With no further questions, I would like to celebrate the new year by giving everyone 14 minutes of their life back. But before I do that, in return for granting you that time, I request that you invest it in attending virtually the board meetings on the 13th and taking good notes so that when we do discuss the budget, you'll be as up to date as everything can be. And otherwise, everybody's happy and smiling, so I assume we all had a very good holiday. And we're back and ready to go and make things are functioning after the snowstorm. So thank you all so much for tonight.
Thank you.
Without objection, if there are none, I see no hands. We'll see you all next Monday, and hopefully you'll all be listening in on the 13th.
Thank you.
Have a safe trip home.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Philippa, you just raised your hand.
No. Oh, I didn't mean. No. I didn't mean to. If I did, it was an accident. Let me take that down. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Not April Fool's. You can't be the Grinch.
Yeah, no, I don't mean to do an April Fool's joke in January.
Oh.
Okay. No problem.